Welcome to Mic Check, WPKN's weekly program, which comes to you every Sunday from 5:30 to 6 p.m., where we focus on global, national, and regional issues and their impact on our local communities. My name is Richard Hill, and today we're going to be focusing on issues of the environment here in Connecticut. And with a brand new legislature coming into office and a new governor, we have invited Amanda Shane, who is the deputy director of the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, to talk to us about the legislative agenda and what her organization is advocating in the coming session. Amanda, thank you so much for taking time out to be with us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Richard.
It's great to have you. Before we get into the heart of the matter, if you would just say a couple of words about your organization and the kind of work it does in our state.
Absolutely. So the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, or CTLCV, is an environmental advocacy group. So we try to say that we are the voice of the environment at the Capitol. You know, we're bipartisan, we're statewide, we're nonprofit, and we make the environment a priority for our elected leaders. Part of that is we identify and track key legislation that affects the environment throughout the session, and then we hold lawmakers accountable for their votes on that in our annual scorecard. So we actually give them a percentage for how often they vote for the environment or against it. We also do a lot of electoral work. So this last year, we were really active in a number of key races. We endorse candidates. We also make independent investments into the campaigns. Obviously, we can't drown out some of the big outside money, that comes in from big business, but we try to do what we can to get the environmental message out, and we're really proud that we elected a pro-environment majority in the legislature and a governor who took our clean energy and climate change pledges. So it's a really exciting time for us.
Why don't you just generally tell us what are some of the key issues that you'll be advocating for during this current legislative session, I guess over the next couple of years before the next state election happens here in Connecticut?
Definitely. And one thing I want to point out as well is we are really honored that our executive director, Lori Brown, was actually a member of the Environment Committee on Lamont's transition team. So we did help at least identify the environmental priorities for his administration. So some of the issues that we're working on are going to relate directly into what we hope will be his priorities and actions. But we also work often with other nonprofits and advocacy groups and the legislators themselves. So I want to start by saying that, the issue of our generation is climate change, and almost all of our policies relate back to climate change. Some of the key things that we're looking at doing are more investment in clean energy. Obviously, last year we scored some major wins in increasing the amount of clean energy investment that Connecticut makes, but we are really focused on getting to 100% clean energy by 2050. So we've seen some development in offshore wind with the new project that's off the coast of New London. That's a great start. Obviously, there's always solar as well. But really, we're going to be focused on clean energy. And the other big thing that we're looking at doing is carbon pricing. This is something where Connecticut can really be a regional leader and work with other neighboring states, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, New York, and really start to set the stage to make the big polluters pay for the pollution and the damage that they do. We've seen such horrific cases of, air quality, air pollution. People really pay a price with that. Asthma rates are sky high right now. So a carbon pricing structure would allow us to fund better public health, would allow us to increase funding for other environmental priorities. And, in a state that's budget strapped the way we are, it's also a good source of revenue. And again, it's holding people accountable. Finally, we see some big opportunities in plastics. There have been many towns coming together to ban or reduce the use of single-use plastic bags or straws. That's an area where we see a lot of energy and movement behind, and we're really excited to start supporting those efforts.
If you would explain a little bit more about the carbon pricing thing, how does that work? Is that basically the same as a carbon tax?
Yeah, carbon pricing or carbon taxing are often the names that get used. And there's a few different models that are used. You hear about cap and trade, for instance, where it places like a ceiling on the total amount of greenhouse gas emissions that industries can produce. And that creates a bit of a market where certain businesses that are very low carbon footprint could sell some of their allowances to businesses that are more carbon heavy. So that has its pluses and minuses, because it would allow some of the biggest polluters to keep operating as normal. And then there's just a regular carbon tax, which is what we would advocate for, where it is a defined rate for greenhouse emissions or on carbon content of fossil fuels. It would really require everyone to pay for the carbon that they're producing in terms of industry, big industry.
Right. Okay. Why don't you tell us now about the environmental summit that you're planning for January 17th at Trinity College? I know that this is an annual event, but tell us a little bit about what the structure of it is and what you have accomplished in the past and what you're aiming to do this year.
Absolutely. So our summit, this is the 19th annual environmental summit, and it brings together environmental advocates, it brings together our lawmakers, policy experts, for basically an entire day that breaks down in panel discussions and brief presentations what the key issues in front of the legislature are, and gives lawmakers in particular the opportunity to ask questions from the experts, to get briefing materials so they can learn the facts, and really get some of their questions answered. It's our setting of the stage, really, for what we feel the environmental agenda is going to be for the year. And we're really excited that this year we've got some great keynote speakers. We have Rohan Patel, who will be there. He currently works for Tesla, but he previously served in the Obama administration, and he's a climate change and environmental quality expert. So he's going to be doing a broad overview, like our big picture window. But we also have experts from across the state in different advocacy groups and environmental groups. You know, we have over 40 lawmakers, I believe, RSVP'd right now. So it's a really good, you know, education. And we have a lot of our first-time freshman lawmakers are coming. So we're really excited that they're energized and engaged in this issue.
If you just give a couple of more details on the...
It'll be on January 17th at Trinity College, and it'll go from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. We do require advanced registration, especially with some of the speakers that we have. So you can RSVP right on our website, and that's ctlcv.org.
Yeah, and if you're just searching, it's the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, and you'll come right to the website, but ctlcv.org. Why don't we get into a little bit of the weeds here, and tell us about the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard, what it is, what it means in terms of how we set the agenda for developing renewable energy in Connecticut?
Yeah, absolutely. So as I mentioned before, that bill, one of the bills that was passed last time around was SB 9, and that was a huge climate change and clean energy bill that really looked to redefine our clean energy goals. So Connecticut acquires its energy needs in these bulk purchases, and for a long time there wasn't really a lot of clear guidance as to how much clean energy needed to be part of those energy acquisitions. And then some low limits were placed, but really they were not a significant part. They were about 20%. And so under the bill that passed last year, now 40% of Connecticut's energy needs will be met by renewable sources by 2030. So that's great. That's a huge step forward, and we definitely want to cheer the doubling of those goals. But you know, as I said before, we're really focused on long-term. We've got to get it up to 100%, because the more carbon is in the air, you know, the more greenhouse gases are created, the more we're going to be doing damage and increasing climate change.
And we're speaking with Amanda Shane. She's the Deputy Director of the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. They're holding a summit on January 17th in Hartford at Trinity College, and you can go to their website and register there for that event, which starts at 9 o'clock in the morning. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about this renewable energy thing. So what are the types of energy that would be included in the definition of renewable? And specifically, does that include nuclear power and natural gas, which was promoted pretty heavily by the previous governor?
Right. And, you know, it definitely does not include natural gas. I mean, that is a finite fossil fuel resource, and it is the project of fracking is so damaging to our environment and produces so much waste and so many carcinogens and so much. So it's definitely not considered a clean energy by any stretch. Nuclear is one that we really haven't taken a huge stance on in the past. And, you know, certainly it's cleaner than many fossil fuels, but it does come with its own risks and dangers. Generally, when we talk about clean energy, we're talking about things like solar, wind, but also geothermal. Connecticut, we're obviously the fuel cell leader of the nation. Fuel cells are considered a clean energy source. There's biomass and hydropower. You know, in Connecticut, I think we see a lot of wind, we see solar, and a little bit of geothermal, and also fuel cells. Those tend to be the more prevalent.
But I'm wondering, though, is nuclear power part of this 40% goal, and right now 20%, but aiming for 40%, is it considered a renewable source?
Under that definition?
Yes.
That's a good question. I would have to look into that and confirm. I do not believe so. I believe that it's mostly the types of clean energy that I just defined, but I would have to double check on that one.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if residents should be concerned that Connecticut continues to invest heavily in nuclear energy. I know that, as you said, the bulk purchase, which would be coming for this year, projects, I believe, a huge number of megawatts that are going to be coming from nuclear power. So the investment is still heavily in nuclear energy and natural gas, given the building out of the infrastructure in the state and the new pipelines.
And obviously the pipeline issue for natural gas is a huge concern for us, because mm-hmm. really study after study has shown that there's not a need for it. And Massachusetts has put a halt to it previously, so far we haven't had to start breaking ground on that, but it's certainly something we're keeping an eye on, because the demand isn't there. And really what we need to be thinking about is the future. You know, natural gas is a stopgap solution, but there's no reason to invest in the stopgap when we could be investing in building the infrastructure, building the storage facilities, capacity for, you know, fuel cells that are also for solar. There again, like offshore wind, we have this great resource. There's already a large and prominent wind farm operating off the coast of Block Island that we could easily tap into. Rooftop solar continues to grow, although we still need a fix for net metering so that people who use solar panels can do so fairly. So those are, you know, we're really focused on the big picture and on the long term and doing things that aren't just these stopgap solutions that still have a lot of questionable ramifications. You know, and that's our biggest concern about natural gas.
You mentioned before that Connecticut League of Conservation Voters does some supporting of candidates and issues through donations, direct donations that you receive and then pass on to candidates you think will support those issues. And you mentioned that you can't compete with the corporate lobbying that occurs. What kind of corporate lobbying is there that we now contend with around natural gas, coal-fired energy, and nuclear power in the state of Connecticut? What are the battle lines?
Where are the battle lines? It really depends on issue by issue and kind of bill by bill, but certainly we've seen pushback from some of the builders associations. Obviously, the big war that tends to go on is, you know, economy versus environment, and this idea that, well, if you're doing something that's good for the environment, that means it's bad for the economy. And it's such a wrong argument, because there are so many ways that the environment supports our healthy economy. There are green jobs, again, like we have these growing fields and clean energy, but there's also outdoor recreation that's widely supported by our parks and our wild spaces. There's no reason that you can't have development and a good environment. It's just got to be done in balance. And the problem is oftentimes you'll get people that just want to railroad over the environment, trying to think about the short-term dollars instead of the long-term future.
Yeah, definitely there's a dichotomy that is generally argued by industry and commercial and corporate voices that I think is a false dichotomy, that you can't have jobs if you have green infrastructure building and pursuing of a clean environment and renewable energy. And that brings up the question, I think, that I'd like to get you to comment on, which is the Green New Deal, which was put forward by just elected progressives in Congress, and specifically on its approach of linking the conversion to renewable energy with the creation of good jobs. What are the prospects for a real aggressive infrastructure build out here in Connecticut to create an infrastructure for renewable energy and at the same time create hundreds, if not thousands, of really good paying jobs for our state?
I'm optimistic. You know, I think it's going to be one of those things that obviously is part of our infrastructure build-out for clean energy is definitely part of our future, and it's definitely part of our agenda, both this legislative session but also long-term. And I think you're starting to see it already. You know, we're seeing more solar panels go up in at mall parking lots and things like that. We're seeing more residents wanting to use solar. We're also seeing more charging stations for electric vehicles. These are becoming more and more common. And that's what you need to have happen, because we haven't even really touched on the fact that, you know, the automotive industry and vehicles are one of the leading contributors to greenhouse gases and to poor air quality. So, you know, conversion over to electric vehicles and making sure that there's infrastructure to support that is at the top of our list. So I am optimistic. I think we had what we called a clean energy for all pledge that we asked every candidate to take, and we received over 100 responses to it, including from the governor. And that was to commit to moving Connecticut to 100% clean energy by 2050. You know, we also, as you mentioned, we do electoral work. We send a survey to every single candidate who runs for legislative office in Connecticut. And, you know, on the questions that we asked in the most recent one, you know, electric vehicles and infrastructure for clean energy were right there in the survey and at the top of the list. And there was, again, broad support for this. So I think, you know, seeing that infrastructure build out is definitely a very real possibility, and hopefully in the near future.
Yeah, I just want to come back to the question of the renewable portfolio and the investments that, you know, some of us believe are too heavy in the nuclear energy side, and this project that Governor Malloy started, which was to really put a lot of the chips on natural gas. I wonder if you believe that there is enough investment right now in offshore wind, solar, geothermal, and also strategies for efficiency and energy storage here in Connecticut. Is there a specific advocacy and possible legislation that could promote a heavier investment in those renewable sources?
Oh, absolutely there is. And you know, certainly we need more of that. We are not yet at levels that we want to be at in terms of our purchasing of offshore wind, of solar. And yeah, I mean, that's one of the big things we're going to be talking to lawmakers about. We have one of our panels at our summit is on clean energy in particular, and talking about some of the legislative ways that we can approach this. So, yeah, we share those concerns as well.
Is this an issue of state investment, or is it just a question of the state sort of giving tax breaks to solar companies or something like that? Is the allocation of funds from the state part of this process, or is it all just let the market decide?
Those types of budgeting questions are always going to have to get negotiated by the lawmakers themselves. You know, certainly we do think of it as an investment in the future and would rather see state dollars go towards clean energy projects as opposed to subsidizing fossil fuels. You know, I think if you're going to put the money anywhere, you should be putting it to something that's going to be good for our economy and our future.
Are there any specific potholes that you see in the state policy, the way the state has spent its money in terms of public buildings, the kinds of infrastructures they have, whether they have solar panels on the rooftops and that type of thing? Are there any like problems that have happened in the past 20 years, and maybe the last, let's narrow it down, the last 8 years, that could be corrected in the next 4 to 8 years?
Well, honestly, like, I think the biggest potholes and the biggest roadblocks are going to come from the industries, right? You know, we've seen already, you know, Eversource and other utility companies really come out hard against anything that they fear would affect their bottom line. So the biggest roadblocks, I think, are not going to be so much structural as making sure that we are creating the jobs in clean energy and showing lawmakers and giving the clear evidence that these investments will pay off. They will lead to new jobs. They will lead to jobs that are going to be here for the future, that are in an industry that's growing and thriving right now. You know, one of the things we heard Governor Lamont talk about in his inaugural address and that we hear lawmakers talk about all the time is these school-to-work pipelines and making sure there's jobs available for our kids. And this is the type of field that we should be investing in. This is the type of field that those jobs are going to come into. So that's the real roadblock, I think.
Thank you for that. Again, we're speaking to Amanda Shane. She's the deputy director of the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. And as we come down the stretch here, I'd like to turn to an issue which is, I think, near and dear to the hearts of many of our listeners, including folks from my hometown, Brantford, and that is the question of plastic pollution. Can you just sort of give an assessment of how big that problem is in Connecticut specifically, and what kind of action we could expect regarding, let's say, plastic bags and straws, as well as an expansion of the bottle bill To include a wide array of containers, which I believe it's now just the soda cans and or beer bottles that have a deposit listed on them.
That's correct. And it's the we'll start with the first question on the plastic bags. You know, it's a huge problem. Connecticut uses more than 400 million plastic bags each year. And these things, they end up in landfills, they end up in the Connecticut River, they end up in the Long Island Sound, they end up in our ocean. You know, they're just everywhere. They are so detrimental to the ecosystems. You know, they have, the bottom line is 91% of plastic isn't recycled, and that includes so much single-use plastic. So we've been really thrilled to see how many towns in Connecticut have stepped up and, you know, have either actively already placed bans on single-use bags or looking at doing so in the near future. Clearly, this is a movement, and this is the time to act. So I think we've been talking to a few different legislators who are interested in taking the lead on that and being part of what we hope will be a bipartisan plastic coalition, and would love to see a statewide legislative fix for that. And then to also address the question of the bottle bill, you're absolutely right. Bottle bill was a landmark recycling program, and we haven't touched it in decades. And so, yes, it only really accounts for soda and beer bottles, and the redemption fee itself is so low that operators of those redemption centers are really struggling to stay in business, and you're seeing more and more of them close. And as a result, again, the plastic bottles start ending up in landfills, they start ending up in the rivers, they start ending up in the Sound. So right now, I believe the compensation for beer cans is at 1.5 cents, and for soda and other beverages, it's at 2 cents. But what those beverages are, it's so restricted. It has to be expanded. They have to start accounting for all the different sports drinks, fruit drinks that people are consuming nowadays. There used to be 21 redemption centers in Connecticut about 4 years ago, and now we're down to 16, and they're going to keep closing their doors if we don't do something. So this is such a crisis that no one really is thinking about, but they will be very shortly. So we, again, on our summit are going to have a panel on plastics, and we'll be talking to some of the lawmakers there about some of the legislative fixes that they could do. So we expect the bottle bill will come up again, and it's going to be a fight. It always is. But we're really hoping that this is the year we get the fix through.
And could you lastly comment on the whole question of plastic recycling in general, really, in our state, the blue bin thing that happens in most cities? We get so many conflicting lists of things that are recyclable. Every city seems to have its own rule. And I think that's because there are so many different companies that do the recycling in Connecticut. I think there are, I don't know, maybe six or something scattered around the state. And so it creates like a patchwork quilt. And right now we know that China is no longer taking a lot of the plastic, and the only stuff I think that's recycled, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, are number one and number two. Those are recycled somewhat locally. I believe there are recycling facilities in the country.
The real problem as well is that the single stream recycling has also caused a lot of contamination. And when you start getting into contamination, the plastic ends up not being sorted. You know, there's such a backlog at our recycling centers as well. And so you're seeing not nearly enough of what people think they are recycling actually being recycled. So that is a huge problem of its own. And one of the speakers at our summit, Lou Birch, does so much work in this field. And he, I know, will be talking in great deal about that and will be available, you know, for comments afterwards, to kind of talk about what some of the possible solutions on that front are, because that is a whole other and bigger problem that we are also going to have to address.
Yeah, I think that there is a lot of confusion on this issue, and the landscape has changed quite radically in the past year and a half or so since China decided not to take this stuff. It used to be that our recycling centers could actually make a little money by shipping and selling this stuff to China. Now, turns out we have to pay to recycle some of this stuff. So it's a big problem. I think we need to focus on it more. Maybe we can have you back to do that in the future. But I want to thank Amanda Shane so much for being here today, Deputy Director of the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters. Remind you one more time that the summit will be held on January 17th at Trinity College, and you can go to CTLCV and just search for the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters, and that will take you to that website. Amanda, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was great to be here.
All right. Hope to see you on January 17th.
Great. I will see you then.
Take care.
Okay, take care.
And you've been listening to Mic Check, which comes to you every Sunday on WPKN from 5:30 to 6 p.m. You are tuned to WPKN in Bridgeport, 89.5, and streaming online at WPKN.org. My name is Richard Hill. Stay tuned for the Ralph Nader Radio Hour coming up in just a minute.